Good morning. Many of them can retire at age 44. Today, we consider what makes a state a great place for military retirees and where Hawaii falls in the ranking. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. You probably know Honolulu's Neil Blaisdell Center, but did you have any idea that it's really a memorial? The woman leading the effort to rededicate it joins us today.
And how to get communities involved in the care of historic cemeteries is part of the work of William Chapman. He's director of the Graduate Program in Historic Preservation at the University of Hawaii Manoa. We'll talk with him today. I'm Chris Vandercook, and playwright Liu Tunauchi lets fly with some dark humor and plenty of pigeon in Echoes of Dat Red Guitar.
That's the conversation for this Memorial Monday, May 25th. First up, this news. Good morning and welcome to this Memorial Day Monday. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Good morning, Chris Vandercook.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Looking at the military life and the prospect of retirement that it offers.
Well, that's true because, you know, part of it is that, you know, when we think retirement, we probably think about the stage of life for someone who is well over the age of 70. But if you're in the military, retirement can come earlier than for most people. 44 is the average age of a military retiree. And that fact can bring a different set of criteria for choosing the best place to live. Consumer and small business financial site WalletHub recently evaluated the best states for military retirees. We called spokesperson Jill Gonzalez earlier, and we talked about why the age of military retirement is such a significant factor.
I think that's really the key difference here is understanding, you know, why would we make a military retiree study in the first case? And people don't understand that. They're a lot, at least 20 years older than most retirees, and they have really different needs. So if you're retiring at age 44 to 47, which is typical of most vets, then it's almost impossible to be living off of that single pension for the rest of your life. And therefore, we see a lot of these military retirees needing to get another job after they've retired from the military.
And how tough is that for them to get that second job?
Well, that's what we looked into, really, from state to state. We saw the states at the top of the list, Wyoming, Maine, South Dakota. They've been doing well, especially in that front, because a lot of military retirees have certain skill sets that the jobs there really are emphasizing now, whether it's more manufacturing, more IT connections, things like that. Hawaii didn't do so well on the economic environment front here for a couple of reasons. One, we looked at the veteran-owned businesses. Hawaii ranked 37th there. A little bit better in veterans' job opportunities, 28th there.
We have had a couple of fairs that have been directed toward hiring a veteran. The skill sets that have been touted include those that you talked about, but also a sense of flexibility and ability to assess situations very quickly, and certainly reliability. Those are all very desirable characteristics. Why do you think that some of the veterans in most states are having more difficulty in finding a job if they've got such great skills?
Yeah, so I think, again, it's going to depend not only on those characteristics, but really more so the industry as well, and how willing the environment, people there are willing to take on vets. I think veteran-owned businesses is really another important statistic. The more vets that really can grow within their job opportunities and either get to the rankings of owning a business or starting a business on their own, then, of course, those businesses are going to be the most likely to hire new military retirees. So I think that's really one of the correlations that we have been seeing throughout this study.
Veteran-owned businesses, businesses that are started by veterans, those also mean that they've got to have some access to capital. Is it easier for a veteran to find that startup capital than, say, an average person?
I think then probably an average retiree, A, because they're usually younger, and B, you know, a lot of people respect what they've done, and there's a lot of angel investors who may one time of their lives have also served. So I think that having that connection is just one more form of networking and picking up those investors, picking up that capital that you do need to start your own business.
As we look at Hawaii, how many veterans do we have in Hawaii that you are able to assess?
Well, we looked at the number of veterans per 100 residents, and Hawaii did pretty well. It has about 9 veterans per 100. That might not sound like a lot, but Alaska had the most at 10. New York had the fewest, only at 4.
So not a really huge spread, but we know that the military presence here is significant, has been for decades. It has historical value, too. Was there any sense as you looked in your data that states like ours, like Hawaii, that have all that, did any better than the states where there really was a very insignificant military presence?
The only states that might have done a little bit better, again, are those kind of Midwestern or Northern states, just because of the job opportunities there that have really kind of taken on another form. But as far as that, you know, that's what we look at for the quality of life, the number of vets that are there. Of course, when they are retired, they want to be surrounded by like-minded people. Also, the number of VA benefit administration facilities, which I think is even more important when you are retired to really be able to take advantage of all of the benefits that some vets might not even know about. Hawaii ranked 2nd there. So the number of VA benefits administration facilities per vet is very high there, 2nd only to Alaska.
And all that sounds really, really good, but if you can't afford to live here, that would preclude being involved with anything else in Hawaii. And we did not terribly well with affordable housing.
Exactly. So I think as far as the cost of living goes, Hawaii historically ranks pretty low on that list. This year, very last, and, you know, beat out Connecticut, beat out D.C., beat out New York. Hawaii is not a cheap place to live, and that really is just emphasized in its housing affordability. We looked at two parts, the median household annual income against the median house price. It ranked last, and we took that the same type of idea for monthly rent for a two-bedroom apartment. So housing affordability and cost of living is one drawback, I mean, really to any retiree, but military retirees, especially if they are struggling to find jobs at the same time. Just to break it down, Hawaii overall, a great place for military retirees. It ranked 12th out of the 50 states plus the District of Columbia. As we kind of touched on before, it ranked 27th, a little bit below average for the economic environment, just because mostly of that job front and the cost of living. But across the boards elsewhere, top 20 for quality of life and health care.
All right, all that sounds really, really good. Now, our state we know is various shades of blue. You did do a breakdown, though, of blue states versus red states. How did that break down?
We are a D.C.-based company. We always try to look into how the red states are doing versus the blue states. This actually was a closer call than most of our studies. So I think that at least is good to hear for these military retirees. But typically, red states are just a little bit more friendly toward military retirees. So the average ranking there was 24th. And then for blue states, it was more like 27th.
So we're looking at 24.96 for red states and 26.93 for blue states. And you say that you expected that to not be as close as it was. Why?
Well, typically on most of the studies that we do, we see sometimes, I mean, at least a 5-point difference, usually a 10-point difference. So it is interesting to see here that most states are pretty much on the same page, especially when it comes to really comparing red versus blue.
That sounds as if they're, as you say, not on the same page, but also that they are becoming more friendly for veterans to think about living in. What do you take away from this study that we need to look at as we go forward?
Well, I really just think that there are three things to be considered when vets are looking for a place to retire. One, employment opportunities. That really is so important, especially as we touched on when these retirees are younger than usual. So other than that, the installation of retiree services, how close you are to these VA benefit facilities. And lastly, and this is unfortunate for Hawaii, but cost of living, of course, plays an important role.
Well, that said, I guess we should be very glad that we came in 12th despite
that.
That's
right. Impressive, all of the other metrics that we looked at.
Thanks so much.
Anytime.
Jill Gonzalez is a spokesperson for Wallet Hub. The online site offers tools and information for consumers and small business owners to make better financial decisions and save money. Their study of the best states for military retirees to live is on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation.
This is The Conversation on member-supported HPR2. It's 8:14. Coming up, the lessons of grave markers from long-gone generations. But first, your quiz.
In our Memorial Day backyard quiz, we're looking back to the Second World War and an incident on the island of Oahu that claimed the lives of 163 naval personnel and injured 396 others in May of 1944. It was Hawaii's second worst wartime disaster, and it began with an explosion in a staging area for amphibious air assault craft. The fire it caused quickly spread to other vessels. The ship had been loaded with munitions for Operation Forager, the invasion of the Japanese-held Mariana Islands. One of them, Saipan, was an especially important target. 29 landing ships' tanks, or LSTs, were tied beam to beam at adjoining piers. They carried munitions and high-octane gasoline in barrels on their decks, and when a mortar round was detonated aboard one of them, it triggered a series of explosions on the adjoining vessels. The disaster led the Navy to change the way it handled munitions when outfitting ships for battle, and the incident is remembered by its location. That's the name we're looking for this morning. You can call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you're the first to know the answer, you'll pick up an HPR t-shirt.
Good morning. I'm Eric Conklin from the Nature Conservancy. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR2, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
On this Memorial Day, we might reflect on the reasons memories of the fallen are so important to us. Has there ever been a culture that does not cherish the memory of past generations? The impulse to preserve those memories is a fundamental human trait, part of what defines us, and if we lose it, we'll be giving away part of our humanity. That's why it's such an important part of historic preservation initiatives, and why Dr. William Chapman will be part of an upcoming workshop in preserving historic cemeteries. He's with us this morning. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Well, I don't have to persuade you of the value of this because you're a historian and you understand why history is important. Do you think people at large understand that?
Well, I'm not really sure that people see cemeteries as part of historic preservation. It's kind of a new venture on our part as well. It's a collaborative effort between the department and the American Studies, which has a historic preservation program, mm-hmm. and also the State Historic Preservation Division. and Kalapapa National Historical Park and the Mo'ili'ili Cemetery Beautification Project. And we got funding, in fact, from the Hawaii Council of the Humanities to put this project on. It was really spearheaded by Noel Kohanu, who is a specialist in our department as well. And I think she probably came to speak to you recently as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we just talked to her the other day.
And we also, Alan Downer will be participating. He's the director of the State Historic Preservation Office. And we have a number of experts. And it kind of emerged from a series of talks that people in the community gave in January, February, and March of this year on preserving historic cemeteries. And we've come to realize how neglected many of them are. Part of the reason is that many of them are associated with chapels. Some are associated with plantation communities. They don't really have the kind of continuity of sort of maintenance that you would expect in a cemetery that's still very much in use. And many of these older cemeteries, in fact, are officially no longer in use. Occasional families can have burials there, but more often, more memorial services. Very few intern body burials go on in many of these cemeteries anymore.
So some of them are just, there really isn't anyone tasked with the responsibility
right.
of taking care
of. And in some cases, people have forgotten what that responsibility is just because there isn't an existent congregation that's involved with it.
In the days of communities that were sort of organic communities,
exactly.
It didn't have to be explained, did it?
Right. Well, the two cemeteries we're going to focus on are actually Mai Mai Cemetery and Pa'ua Cemetery, which are technically under the and literally under the control of the Kamakapila Church. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually, Trevor and Buddy Mauna Kea are both helping on this, and so they'll be playing a part as well in the entire project.
What is it that needs to be done?
Well, what our focus is we have two parts. We really, well, I guess we could say three parts. We have a workshop that's open to anybody in the public, and it's not too late to join on. It's all going to be held at UH Manoa, and just for those of you who have ever tried to do anything at UH Manoa, it's actually not that hard to park there over the summertime. So
yeah.
There's parking in the structure and parking on campus as well.
Tell me about what you're going to be doing at the workshop.
Right. So we're going to have a five-day workshop followed up by a morning that's even sort of more open to the public, or we hope to get more people to come on a Saturday morning, and that's going to be held at Kamakapili Church. And so that's the sixth day in the morning. But the workshop itself, let's sort of looking quickly at
Bill,
the schedule.
Let's forget about the schedule for
all right.
now. Let's talk about what the ideas are in play here.
Well, it's a mixture of documentation, how to document what's there, and how to kind of inventory or make a survey of what's there,
mm-hmm.
and a combination of that and understanding actually how to repair stones and how to write stones and things like that. We have Richard Miller coming from Kalapapa. He's
uh-huh.
been working with several cemeteries in Kalapapa.
What is involved with that, Bill?
Well, sometimes it's very little. Sometimes it's simply making a record, taking a picture, trying to get the inscriptions down, trying to coordinate that with existing maps.
Mm-hmm.
Another part is actually some of them have a kind of curb or a low fence that could be easily repaired. Some are simply tilted, and there are ways to repair some of the tilting. There are a couple stones we're going to do demonstration projects on that actually have been damaged and are broken. And there are ways of mending those. And Richard's going to take the students and members of the public through that.
So there are a lot of specific tasks to
very
be
much
performed.
So. Right, right. And some of those more arduous tasks are going to fall on the students who will be doing the workshop concurrently,
mm-hmm.
but then we'll stay on for a further week. So the students who are taking this program will be there for a full 2 weeks.
When you talk to students about why this is important, What are the kind of things that you say?
Well, I explained to them this is not only about learning about cemeteries, but it's learning about conservation generally, too. How to repair stone, how to make an inventory, how to do mapping, things that have a kind of technical application beyond simply working on cemeteries.
The fact that some of these cemeteries have fallen into disrepair is sort of an indication in a way of the way society has changed, because if they were the cemetery in the churchyard, and the community was sort of focused around that, the idea of maintaining them didn't have to be sold to anybody. It was just something that the community did.
Yeah,
right?
I think you're right, Chris, and I'm learning more about it all the time as well. Is that, you know, some cemeteries have expectations that people will pay an annual fee for maintenance. Some cemeteries never put that in place. Many of the churchyard cemeteries you talk about never really thought about long-term sustainability, if you will, and how to keep these places going for a long time.
Because the communities were unified.
Exactly. And as you know, a lot of the more traditional churches have seen a fall off in their membership as well. And many of the newer churches don't actually deal with cemeteries in the same way that the older churches did. They have different ways of dealing with burial and other things.
And yet it sort of hits at something fundamental in us, Bill, when we see a cemetery in disrepair, yeah?
I think so. I think it feels, it hurts actually to see stones broken, to see places that have been vandalized. And
just because it's a discontinuity with our past. Yeah?
Exactly. And I think you're very right. I mean, people have moved away. The centers of population have moved from the countryside more to urban life.
Well, I hope you are able to attract a lot of people to this workshop.
Yeah, like I said, anybody who wants to come is welcome to come, and we, at least for the first week and for the opening day.
Yeah.
And I really want to thank all the people that are participating.
Well, we'll hope to send some people your way.
Quick word for Nanette Napoleon, who is donating a lot of time to this project as well.
Terrific.
Thanks.
Dr. William Chapman is the director of the Graduate Program in Historic Preservation at the University of Hawaii Manoa, which is hosting a free week-long workshop in preserving historic cemeteries. That's the first week in June, and you can learn more about it on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
This Memorial Day morning, there's good reason for Hawaii to stand tall. According to the Washington Post, Hawaii has suffered highest per capita losses in recent military conflicts. It's a reality check worth repeating. Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair joins us now with more details. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Few people would probably know this.
I didn't. It took me by surprise. So this is part of a regular feature that the Washington Post has that singles out states as the best state. And in this regard, we were singled out as the best state for the ultimate sacrifice. But yes, it's not a population. In that regard, California, of course, being the largest state, more of its residents died in the four major conflicts since World War II. But per capita, proportionally, Hawaii comes out on top when you add up the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Gulf War, and the current, I guess we'll call them, wars on terror in Afghanistan and Iraq and so forth.
I mean, this isn't a statistic that we probably would think a great deal about or talk about, except on a day like today when all of our thoughts are focused in that way. Why do you think that we don't know this thing, which is actually, in its own way, a very good thing?
You know, and the numbers are solid. I checked out the Washington Post sources, and it's the Defense Department's own statistics on casualties and deaths and so forth. We certainly, of course, are very cognizant of how important the sacrifice is. There will be ceremonies at Punch Bowl and other places. I think they had something at the Nautitorium either yesterday or today. So we definitely are recognizing, I think, in many ways how important that sacrifice is. But to actually have the numbers there in front of you, it really kind of takes you by surprise. I should give credit to some other states, by the way. Nevada, proportionally, gave the most sacrifices in Vietnam. For the Gulf War, it was New Hampshire, and then for the current wars, it's Wyoming. So credit to other states as well for having contributed. It's the Korean War, by the way, where we gave the highest numbers of our own citizens, although Hawaii wasn't actually a state during the Korean War, right? It wouldn't come until 1959.
It doesn't matter what label you put on it. The people who went off and did what they felt was their duty is reason enough for us to be able to remember. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Beth Ann.
And have a good rest of your Memorial Day. And thanks for being with us this morning. Chad Blair reports on politics for CivilBeat.com.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Monkey Pod Kitchen by Merriman, celebrating the craft of food, drink, and merrymaking with restaurant locations in Ko'olina, Oahu, and Wailea, Maui.
It's one of those places you might just pass by, even if you're among the culturally inclined. The Neil Blaisdell Center has been around a long time, and most people know it as a place to hear the symphony, enjoy opera, see a ballet, or shows and performers visiting Honolulu. What they may not know is that the original intent of the center was as a dedicated memorial. But Tanya Harrison isn't among most people. In the course of other research, she found out that the NBC had been originally dedicated as a war memorial. Tanya Harrison came into our studio last week. I asked her what made her want to bring the rest of us back to that point.
By the time I learned Blaisdell was forgotten as a memorial, I had been researching this for several years. I originally wanted to find the memorial plaque and take a photo of it, because I grew up knowing the Blaisdell, and I felt ashamed not knowing it was a memorial. And I thought, I'll find that plaque, take a photo, all is good. I haunted the grounds of the Blaisdell for years looking for that thing. And after researching it, I realized this was forgotten. And I felt that with all of this knowledge I had of this place, I couldn't walk away and not do something about this. It had to be brought back. It had to be resurrected, reawakened, so to speak. And because this is a very large memorial, a very prominent place, you don't forget a memorial of that size. And so I just couldn't live with myself if I walked away from it.
So the memorial plaque was never found?
It's never been found, and the city has searched for it.
So there's a record of it being a memorial, but yeah, there's no memorial on site to let people know that it's a memorial?
Correct.
So how do you intend to rectify that?
Well, I recruited veterans last year. I came back to visit during Memorial Day weekend, and with a member of a veterans organization, we went to various Memorial Day events, and I just made contacts with people, and there were three veterans who felt that this was worth their time to assist with this project. That's when things really took off. It's because of their effort that the Blaisdell will eventually be rededicated as a war memorial. These three prominent veterans, we have a president of the MIS Veterans Club. He's a World War II veteran. We have Gene Castagnetti, who is a retired Marine, and he used to run the Punch Bowl Cemetery. And we have another gentleman, a Vietnam veteran. It's because, these three men are honored by the Blaisdell. They are Hawaii War veterans. I'm just a researcher. I need to give them credit, and all of Hawaii's war veterans credit, for this being what it is. So we have since been working with the city, and my understanding is that the city will be making new plaques for the Blaisdell, and it will be rededicated.
Is there any time frame on that?
There is money in the budget for this coming fiscal year to construct plaques, I believe, and that it would be within the next year. But we are having a meeting with the city next month, so I'm sure the particulars will be discussed then.
You let us know this in a letter that you wrote us back when you were still in Oregon and trying to get the word out about it. We picked it up, so did the Star Advertiser. Has that brought more people to you to understand that this is a worthwhile project?
I've had a few people interact with me about this. They were all surprised. No one knew it was a memorial. But we already, as far as the rededication effort, we have enough people on board to work towards and get it rededicated. So people have assisted me with the research. Peter Young actually sent me some documents that I hadn't found yet, so links to documents. So that was very nice.
There are a lot of people here and probably a lot of places, not just news outlets, who also didn't realize that the Neil Blaisdell Center was a memorial. When do you think that consciousness was lost?
Boy, I think it was lost pretty quickly. The memorial dedication itself wasn't very well organized, and the Blaisdell actually had been forgotten a few times as a memorial in the planning stages. It just kept being brought back. So it's just a multiple of things that occurred. It fell through the cracks, a very big crack, but it's an unusual situation. I think by the time Fossey was in office, it probably would have been lost. I've spoken to people from back in the late 60s, early 70s that knew this place that never knew.
How did you originally find out about it? Because you're not that old either.
I was researching fish ponds in the Kakaako area, and I knew that where the Blaisdells constructed, the ponds there were filled in the early 60s, and in the rest of Kakaako, the ponds were filled in much earlier. And I wanted to just read about them, what kind of flora and fauna were in these ponds, are there photos. I have family connections to Kakaako going way back to the 1800s, and we have a oral history of association with fish ponds. While I was reading about the fish ponds at the Ward Estate, I kept seeing reference to the construction of a war memorial municipal auditorium. And I thought, oh, that's the Blaisdell. I didn't realize that that was considered a war memorial. And I decided to see, was it dedicated as one? Yes, it was. There's a plaque. Let's go look for it. And that's what happened.
The Neil Blaisdell Center is aging. And there is talk that it may be rehabbed or it may be replaced or something may happen with it to it. Are you at all concerned about that as it's a memorial?
My concern is that the public is aware that it's a memorial before the city asks them for input on its future. I believe in order for the public to make an informed decision on what they may want to see at the Blaisdell, this part of this history needs to be made aware to everyone, and it also needs to be perpetuated. Whatever is done at the Blaisdell, if anything is done, its war memorial heritage needs to be perpetuated. So that's a concern of mine.
Has the city given you any indication that they will comply with your wishes?
I actually did receive a letter from the city that did say that they will take the Blaisdell's memorial aspect into account in the master planning process, as well as many other aspects as well. So that looks optimistic, but I will continue to work on this and to monitor the situation. Consider me a Blaisdell Center War Memorial missionary, if you will, to help educate the public about this.
And it's taken you on a much longer journey than you ever anticipated.
I had no clue.
And now most of us will hopefully have a clue once this thing is rededicated and that plaque is there for all to see. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us this story that we should know.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Tanya Harrison is a member of the Neil S. Blaisdell Center War Memorial Project. She was raised on Kauai, now works for the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Sorry about that. In Pendleton, Oregon, she's a wildlife biologist specializing in fisheries habitat and is an avid independent researcher. More about the project is on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation. And if you have any information to add to the project, Tanya Harrison's contact information is there too.
Thank you.
In today's Backyard Quiz, we remembered a naval disaster of the Second World War that was, after Pearl Harbor, Hawaii's second worst. Although 163 naval personnel were killed and 396 others injured, the story was kept out of the press by wartime censorship. A blackout was strictly enforced, and naval personnel were ordered not to talk about the incident. The disaster was classified until 1960. It started just after 3 p.m. on Sunday, May 21, 1944, when a mortar round exploded aboard an LST, or landing ship tank. The chain reaction of explosions that followed made some observers think it was another Japanese attack. Others thought it was an earthquake. A naval board of inquiry after the incident led to changes in the way munitions were handled aboard ship, and today the event is remembered by its location as the Westlock disaster.
And Walter Stevens from Hawaii Kai knew the answer and called in, so there'll be a T-shirt heading your way very soon. It's 8:44, and that was the answer to today's Backyard Quiz. If you've got a quiz for us, you can send it in to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Aloha, I'm Gina Searles from Hawaii State Ballet. You're tuned to HBR2 Hawaii Public Radio. Continue the conversation with us by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @HIConversation.
Time for Stargazer, our weekly look at what's happening in the universe and our island skies. We turn, as usual, to Christopher Phillips' Mauna Kea Astronomy Outreach Committee. And this week's report. Hey, Christopher, what's happening?
Hey, Dave. In the west, just after sunset, the planet Venus will be the brightest object in the night sky. Also in the west will be the giant planet Jupiter. Finally, the ringed giant Saturn will be rising in the east at around about 7 p.m. Now, this week, the moon will be well on its way to becoming full, and so this means that spotting those faint objects, such as satellites and meteors and faint stars, will be very difficult.
I know a place where it probably wouldn't be too difficult, and that would be up at the summit of Mauna Kea, and I understand that you've got another exciting discovery to share for us, and this one is from Keck?
Absolutely right. This is from scientists using the twin 10-meter telescopes of the Keck Observatory atop the mountain of Mauna Kea. Now, astronomers using those telescopes have peered into a mysterious region of space containing some of the most powerful objects in the universe, quasars. This discovery is historic because it is the first time that astronomers have observed a group of quasars together in the same region of space.
Now, do we call that a pride, a troop, a school of quasar?
I don't think they even have a name for it yet.
And so what is exactly a quasar?
Well, a quasar is an extremely bright object that emits massive amounts of radiation, and you normally find them at the center of distant galaxies.
And the cause of quasars?
We think that quasars are powered by supermassive black holes at the center of distant galaxies. As the black holes consume nearby materials, such as gas, dust, and even other stars, they give off massive amounts of radiation, including visible light, X-rays, ultraviolet rays, and gamma rays.
That's a lot of stuff right there. So how much energy are they giving off?
Well, the amount of energy a quasar can give off is around 1,000 times that of every star in the Milky Way galaxy combined. They are immensely powerful.
And how many are in the pack?
Well, the astronomers using Keck were able to detect 4 of these quasars in very close proximity to one another. Now, this is weird because quasars are normally found by themselves. In fact, some scientists just cannot believe their luck that so many were found so close to each other.
I think we'll have to revise our term pack and we'll call it a pride of quasars after lions, the king of the jungle.
Sounds good to me.
Christopher Phillips, Mauna Kea Astronomy Outreach Committee, thank you so much for the report.
You're welcome, Dave.
And I'm Dave Lawrence. We'll catch you next week for Stargazer.
He's a state worker who's getting a little old to be living at home. He's got a job with the state that threatens to drive him crazy. Could this be anyone you know? Lee Tonouchi is a playwright with a sharp eye for the foibles of local life and an ear that's well tuned to the rhythms of local speech. That's the setting in his latest play, Echoes of That Red Guitar, which opens this week. He's on hand this morning. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Chris.
I love that setup of the, aren't you getting a little old to be living at home? I've known a lot of people in that situation.
I think any more and more, it's like cost too expensive to buy your own home, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. But then the whole idea of him being a state worker puts him squarely at the center of local life, yeah?
I still remember my friend saw a commercial for like the Kumukahua Theater commercial. He was like, are you making fun of state workers? I was like, yes, we are. But unfortunately, the show, today's show is good because normally most state workers might be at work already. They would be working, so they wouldn't be able to hear your show. But today, they're off, so they can hear the promo. Huh?
It's very important that they hear it because this is their story, right?
Yeah.
State worker in an office that is filled with colorful characters. And does it happen right when the furloughs hit?
It's right before.
So he's in place when the announcement comes that...
And that's correct. He's the low man on a totem pole, so he's going to be the first for go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So how does he react to that?
Oh, it's like spoilers, bro, Chris. I don't like to give away too much, but my people are not going to go.
Don't worry about it. That's the setup, yeah?
He may or may not react well, but if you've seen the commercial, he showed him with a gun, that might give a little bit too much away already.
Well, you get this whole idea of somebody with a placid exterior, right? Does he have a reasonably placid exterior?
He can pass for like the normal Joe, but sometimes things set him off and...
Things are simmering, right?
Then he has like anger management comes out.
Yeah. In a setting, describe the setting of his daily life, if you
will. Daily life, okay. He still lives at home with mom and pops. It's not a happy-go-lucky, typical, local kind of family. The father gets some traumatic war issues going on in his background. He has a little bit of a temper, too. At his work situation, get this girl that he likes, but she might not know he even exists. Get people at work. They kind of pick on him. Get on boss. I guess kind of nice, but not the nicest of bosses.
So the potential is there for him for all this simmering to boil over, yeah?
Correct. So make sure you see the play. You gonna see him, huh?
What's the red guitar?
The red guitar? You don't know. It's not echoes of our red guitar or, echoes of one red guitar. It's echoes of that red guitar. It's one particular guitar.
Right.
And you don't know which guitar you're talking about.
That's for you to tell me.
It's like William Carlos Williams, bro. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow. You don't know which red guitar. Kikaida. You don't know Kikaida?
Tell me.
You don't know Kikaida? How old was you in like 1974?
I was already much too old for
much
all
too
this
old
stuff.
For Kikaida.
I've been old all my life, Lee. What can I tell you?
So for the people who know, what is that red guitar? The first guitar they should think of is Jiro's red guitar from Kikaida.
Fill me in.
Growing up in the 70s, that was like a Japanese superhero show. And even though the thing had subtitles, that was still the most popular show amongst all the keikis. So that's a show I was hoping for to acknowledge for reference. Because I seen one play before that kind of talked about Kikaida and had some of the Kikaida references. But it only brought up like the campier aspects of Kikaida. Never go into the deep, serious themes that, was found in the show.
Which are what?
It's about man's ability, to fight off all like these dark influences. Is man good or is man bad?
Issues that are affecting the hero of your play, right?
Correct. He's the hero, but he's also the anti-hero.
Okay, so Kikaida is going to be his salvation in a sense, right?
That's his Japanese amakua.
Yeah.
If there is such one thing.
Well, there is now, right? that's the power of the playwright, right?
Yeah.
So his amakua is to whom he turns with the stresses of this state job are getting to be a little too much for him?
Well, he decides early on that he doesn't want to feel, so he wants to be a robot like Kikaida because Kikaida doesn't feel. And he tries to be good, but a lot of times he ends up, not doing things that's so good.
So that's obviously the direction of the action of the play, right? Who are some of the other characters?
Okay, you get Guy. He's the main guy.
Right.
You get the girl that he likes. His name is her name is Girly. Uh-huh. See how creative all these names is, huh?
It's really. And must have stayed up all night.
Then guy, he's like the office bully. His name is Gage, because he always tries to gauge how well he's doing against other people.
Uh-huh.
And then get other characters like the boss. His name is Gil. And then get Gannon and Garen. And then the question you should ask is, Lee, how come all these characters start with G?
Okay, consider it asked.
I was thinking that too. I was writing down all the names. Hey, how come everybody's name starts with G? I figure if anybody asks me, I'm just going to say, it's all G.
Okay, fair enough. You excited about this one?
Oh, excited about every play. Every play is like having like a new baby born, so always very excited to go.
But you've been staying away from rehearsals for the last...
I just go when they ask me for come down, so not like I purposely stay away.
Uh-huh.
But the last time I went, which was a few weeks ago, they had Act 1 all down. So hopefully by now they have Act 1 and Act 2 down.
I would imagine they did,
she hopes
you?
So. Yeah.
You're going to be there at the premiere then?
Oh, definitely. Gotta go. Yeah.
Do sometimes people laugh at moments you didn't expect them to and not laugh at moments you did? Have you found that in the past?
Sometimes. Sometimes people have like odd senses of humor. I was like, why are you laughing at that for? It throws off the whole audience if like only one person laughs at like a weird part.
Yeah.
So hopefully everybody laughs all at the same time and then comes more fun, yeah?
Well, aren't you one of these people who might be the only one in the theater laughing at a certain moment in a play or movie?
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to laugh, because I wrote all the jokes, so I don't know. I guess we shall see. I guess it's going to be like those surprising moments that, you know, people laugh when I never expect them to. That's going to make me laugh. So I'm going to be the oddball that's trying everybody off. Yeah?
Well, maybe you'll get more laughs than you even expected.
Oh, maybe. Maybe the play is going to be 4 hours instead of 2 hours, because people are going to be laughing. Yeah?
Well, that's not that would scare them away. 4 hours in a theater.
Well, you get more bang for your buck if 4 hours. Eh? $20 for 4 hours instead of $20 for 2 hours.
If you can sell it that way, I congratulate you. That would be a trick. That really would. Well, good luck with the show, Lee. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for conversating with me.
Sure. Lee Tonucci is the author of Echoes of That Red Guitar, which opens Thursday, runs until June 28th at Kumukahua Theater in downtown Honolulu. He'll have a talk story with the audience after the June 5th performance, and you can learn more about the show on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Local girl Marianne Ito has been compared to vocalist Erykah Badu and Jill Scott. On June 6th, she brings her soulful, jazzy style, flavored with R&B and hip-hop, for the first time to HPR's Atherton Studio. Hear her perform from her Hoku-nominated CD, Waking Up, before she embarks on a European tour. That's Saturday, June 6th at 7:30 p.m., tickets at 955-8821 during business hours or at hprtickets.org.
Tuberculosis. Just when you thought it was long gone, there are people testing positive for exposure every week. Where do they get it from? I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Join me today on The Body Show when we hear from Dr. Elizabeth McNeil from the TB Control Unit about tuberculosis in Hawaii. Today at 5 on The Body Show.
Well, the streets were deserted when I drove in this morning, Beth Ann.
They were deserted, but hopefully we haven't deserted the reasons and the people who made this day possible for us.
I would hope that a lot of people were up at Punch Bowl and other sites of memorial services today.
And at 3 o'clock today to have a quiet moment wherever you are to stop and just to do your own private remembrance. Earlier this morning, I was listening to Morning Edition, and they were talking about that national moment of remembrance, 3 o'clock, wherever you are. Mm-hmm. And a woman was saying that when she had been talking to some kids, and she said, well, you know, do you know what this memorial holiday means? And they said, yeah, it's the day the pool opens. And she was just crushed.
Yeah, that's troubling, but there are a lot of people keeping memories alive out there.
There's a good remedy for that. Talk to a kid in your life.
Yeah.
I'm going to go hang out with a couple of kids in my life a little later on and go see Tomorrowland and do all those good things. But at 3 o'clock, we'll all be remembering. Hope you will be doing something that makes you think about this day, too. That's going to do it for us. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be speaking with Brad Glosserman. He's the executive director of the Pacific Forum CSIS in Honolulu. And we're going to talk to him about why he says that Japan and Korea need to establish a grand bargain.
And the West Hawaii Dance Theater is reviving the classic choreography of Sleeping Beauty. We'd like to hear from you. You can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, post comments on Facebook at HC, or tweet us at HI Conversation.
And, of course, our talkback line is 792-8217, and you can find lots of good things on our website, hpr2.org.
I'm Chris Vandercook.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. More of the conversation tomorrow morning right here at 8. See you then.